So, Bobby, before we get started here, I want to know if I could ask you a quick question, and feel free to answer this however you want to. I don't know if this is going to be something that's personal or not, but do you mind if I do that real quick?
Sure thing, man.
Okay.
Definitely.
So, I got into this personally, into this area. I mean, this is a very strange area to get into. Not a lot of people have sort of the guts to follow through and really overcome this, sort of take charge of this area of their lives. Now that we've gotten into this space, we've seen, literally hundreds of thousands of guys who actually are like us, who do have this drive, and it seems to be the majority now. But when we first started out, I'm assuming it's the same for you. But that's really what I want to ask. How was it? Was it like you were all alone in this, or did you have some kind of guidance? Like, what sort of was the experience like for you, and what drew you to keep going through it?
For me, it was a battle, pretty much a lifelong battle against shyness that was almost crippling, not just my dating life, but just my social life in general. Having got to college, it was at the point where I just knew, like, it wasn't anything like it was for other people. I would show up at a party and not have a clue how to socialize and fit in, and I'd look around, and it was like it came naturally to other people. So, and when I tried to ask people about it and try to kind of get their, suggestions, it was like they couldn't even explain it because to them they couldn't comprehend why I wasn't able to just walk into a group of girls and start talking, or why I couldn't, sit at a table with people and contribute in the same fun way that everybody else was. So yeah, I can definitely sort of say that it was, I guess, a lonely feeling knowing that. Most people couldn't even relate to what I was going through.
Did you kind of feel like, at that time, did it ever cross your mind that you might never get this figured out?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, it was frustrating, especially being in college at the time and seeing, if the listeners or yourself have, experienced college life, that it can be an amazing experience. And when you look around and you're thinking that I'm just wasting it, I'm seeing like friends, like meeting girls constantly and meeting new girls at parties every night, and I'm sitting there going, this is going to be over before I know it. And at the time I didn't think I would be able to fix it. I thought, okay, let me just get through these 4 years, and then eventually I'll hopefully make enough money, and when I'm making enough money, it won't matter that I can't talk or that I'm shy.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of whenever I lived in New York for a while, we kind of run into a lot of those guys who are just realizing that just because they have a lot of money doesn't mean anything,
Yeah.
And I've never met an angrier man in my life than that guy who spent 8 years studying to impress people, and to get women, and then all of a sudden they get out of college and they're like, "All right, now it's time for women everywhere," and they go into work and it's just like nobody. Their entire life is work.
Yeah.
And just, oh man, it's so sad. But I kind of had the same thought. I mean, I when I was in college, it was a little bit different for me. I had already sort of submitted to the idea that I was never going to figure this out by the time I went to college, that I was going to be like this for the rest of my life. And it wasn't that I didn't know how to talk. I could talk to like my family, or like my close friends. It's that I didn't think I deserved anything better than what I currently had. I mean, there would be women, if women were interested in me, I never saw it ever. And then I was just completely shocked whenever a girl was like aggravated enough to come up and talk to me because I wasn't talking to her, And it's just like I never saw anything. Everything that I did that I saw or sort of experienced served to reinforce the belief that I wasn't good enough and that I was always going to be like this, And that was sort of my fault there. And I went through like I did some amazing mental gymnastics during this process just to reinforce that idea. I mean, I would like went so far as to actually changing my taste in women changed so that the really hot girls that were typically attractive were not attractive to me anymore. You know what I mean? I would just find some
Yeah.
reason why they're stupid or like, oh, they're probably all idiots, or like, I want an intelligent girl. I would just like raise my standards. Even though I didn't have anybody in my life at all whatsoever. So I didn't have any reason
Yeah.
or really any right to raise my standards. I think you really have to earn the right to raise your standards. And I didn't have that. So I was just kind of like lying to myself. And I just kind of, I sort of all came down to a point when I realized I really need to get this stuff handled. Did you ever have that point for you where it was like a crux moment, like a linchpin, and then this thing happened and you snapped or anything like that? Or was it like a gradual process for you?
You know what, when I look back on it, I mean, at the time, it just felt like, you know, a weight that you know, when I look back over it, over a long period of time, there was mm-hmm. moments that I can pick out now that like, I can say were, like, signifying moments. At the time, it was just another bad day, you know? I can think back now to a moment where I was at a mixer, a college mixer, mm-hmm. and this girl walked up to me, this adorably cute, like, punkish rocker-type girl, mm-hmm. and she just walked up and kissed me on the lips, and I was standing in the corner at the party. And my friend was standing there. He's shocked, and he's like, you know, he kind of walked away from me and was like, you know, gave me the thumbs up. And the minute he left, I stood there, and I didn't have anything to say. Like, and I wound up just, like, after about 3 seconds, 3 minutes of silence, I was like, oh, what's your major? And, you know, then we had about 30 seconds of horrible conversation, and she walked away, and, you know, and that was it, you know. And right then I was like, this girl kissed me on the lips, and I still couldn't close the deal. You know, I still couldn't even take it further than what's your major. And mm-hmm. and I realized that, like, you know, meanwhile, you know, you look around at the kind of the party that I had been going to, and it was like in every corner there was people making out, there was, you know, girls following guys back up to the bedrooms at these parties or back at the dorms. And here it was like I couldn't even get a girl who showed me she was interested. And I still remember that because, A, the girl was absolutely adorable, and I kicked myself for months afterwards, and, B, just because it just shows that, like, even when people always say, oh, if you're good-looking, it doesn't matter. You know, it's not a big deal. It's easier. And my problem was never that I was bad-looking. I wasn't, you know. I would gain interest, but I could never hold a girl's interest. I could never keep it, you know. It was very quick for a girl to get bored, and within a few minutes of talking to me, realizing, you know what, he's all right looking, but he's got nothing going on. He's, you know, he doesn't have anything. He's fun. He's boring. So
it's funny because I think a lot of guys, you know, a lot of guys who don't believe that they're attractive are probably listening to this right now and going, "What are you talking about?" You know, because I mean, I totally get it now. I never thought that I was an attractive guy, so I can imagine that guys are thinking this. You know. I mean, I, but it's true. I mean, I get guys, and you probably do too. I mean, I've literally have male models as clients, and they're like, I have no idea what I'm doing wrong. I just don't know what to say, you know, and it is a major problem. You know, it just kind of goes to show you, like, those guys who seemed like they're the attractive, like, oh, they're getting all the attention. And, you know, for example, when I used to live in New York, there's this friend of mine named Eric that lived there, and Eric was just like, ridiculously, still is, ridiculously good-looking guy. Like, just amazing. I never thought anything about it because, you know, I'm not gay, so I can't tell that he's a good-looking guy until I watch women react to him. So I just have no idea. I mean, I could tell if a guy was, like, muscular and, like, he had chiseled features and stuff. I could tell that women would probably find him attractive. But the truth is that women would walk past me in the bar. I would be standing there doing my thing, even. And they would walk right past me in the bar and walk up to him and go, "You're beautiful." You know, and he ended up being a client of mine because he's like, I have no idea what to say after that. I don't know what to do. And you're right, man. I mean, you have to have something. Even if you are really good looking, you know, you still fall into the same pit that everyone else does. And that is, you have to learn this skill. It's not something that you're born with. You know, I think a lot of guys beat themselves up because they're not born with this skill set. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I can see how people think that, you know, like I said, I've been married for the longest time. You know, I just didn't know what was wrong with me. And mm-hmm. let me ask you, like, what when you were starting out, what mm-hmm. would, you know, you said that you had trouble. What kind of mistakes were you making that maybe a guy listening would be able to relate to? And maybe by seeing that you made the mistake, it'll kind of point out, like, you know, a little flaw he might have been making.
Okay, well, you might want to do some hand stretches if you're taking notes right now. Because I'm going to give a lot of mistakes that I've made a lot of mistakes. I mean, I've made probably every mistake in the book, personally. When I finally got to the point where I was actually embracing mistakes, that's when I really started making a lot of them. But that's a different scenario, you know. The time in my life when I was making crippling mistakes, the biggest ones that I made, and this is, looking back on this now, I can see this very clearly, but in the moment, and actually for years after this, I never saw this as being the problem. I always tried to find something else as being the problem. Mm-hmm. But the main problem was that I was trying to really, I mean, really it comes down to me trying to trick women into liking me by trying to be that super nice guy, you know? Okay. Like, I was super, like, I was everything that a woman says she wants in a man, you know? I was sweet, I was honest, I was loyal, I was, you know, more of a feminist. I tiptoed around certain topics. I would change my view on certain things because I thought that women would be offended. It was just like a really, you know, when I look back on it, it's like a really disgustingly sneaky thing to do. But yeah. At the time, I wasn't thinking about that at all. I wasn't thinking that it was sneaky. I was just thinking, well, I'm not that guy though. You know, that's the guy that everyone's always, you know, these girls are always complaining about. You know, and then it eventually came to this major realization that I think that every guy has at some point, and that is, you know, that they start to stop, they say that thing, that sentence, and then they go, you know, I'm not that guy though, you know, and that guy is the guy who pisses you off and makes you angry, makes you cry, you know, I'm not that guy. And then
we
realize those guys are the only guys who are getting women. You know, these women are obsessed over those guys. And then I had to go, well, shit, I don't want to be that guy though. You know, there's got to be a way for me to be as good or better than that guy, still get a bunch of women, but not have to be like that. You know, because I just made such a major decision in my life to not, you know, give in to being a complete dickhead, you know, and like misogynistic and all that stuff. And I sort of took it to an extreme, you know, and I was like this very understanding, caring kind of guy. And I still am a very understanding and caring kind of guy, but I just shifted parts of my personality so that it wasn't really a lie. And that's how it all started to sort of fall in pieces, into the right place for me. The pieces fell in the right place. But, you know, I made that mistake. That was a major one. Another one was that, oh, this is a big one. I thought that, so I grew up, Bobby, I grew up in a trailer park. I don't know if you know that about me. Do you know that?
No. Okay. No, I didn't know that.
I don't usually announce it to everybody, but, you know, it comes up in conversation, especially during interviews sometimes. And this was a major insecurity of mine. And I lived in Florida. It was North Florida, so it was still very Southern. So in Florida, it was half poor Southerners and then half rich Northerners who came down to the South, you know, and retired, basically. And so I was in the former of those two. I was a poor Southerner. And I love my life. I love my childhood. Everything was amazing. It was just, I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. But I still had this, you know, thing hang, this like sort of dark cloud hanging over my head, sort of like that I was didn't have any money and I didn't come from blue blood or any kind of like rich background. So whenever I would meet new women, I was trying to overcome that with them. I was trying to compensate for that. And when I realized eventually, I can't remember how I realized this, but it was a really big, like, it's, when I say it's going to sound ridiculously obvious, like, almost, you may be like, oh, maybe Josh has got a little bit of retardation going on, you know? But the truth is, when it was happening, I didn't see it. And maybe this is the same for, you know, you, if you're listening to this, maybe you'll kind of relate to this. I didn't realize that when you meet somebody for the first time, they have no idea who you are or where you came from or any insecurities that you have. They have no idea that they're there. And so I was actually carrying this luggage, like this extra baggage, and dumping it into every conversation, assuming that people already knew, but they don't. And that means that every time you meet somebody, anytime you meet a new person, a new woman, you have the opportunity to reinvent yourself. And that is one of the biggest realizations I've ever had. I didn't realize that before. It didn't dawn on me that I had, you know, every time I meet a new girl, she doesn't know who I am. I could be like the suave, you know, rich guy in her mind as far as she knows. You know, I didn't end up lying. I did go through a phase where I did lie just to kind of see how that worked. But I didn't lie about this stuff, you know. And it just, I don't know, it was just some sort of like, I don't know, it was kind of like I just had my eyes open for the first time and I realized I could walk up to anybody. Then I started trying it out. And the first thing I started just kind of pretending that I had these skills or that I was used to women talking to me. And that ended up working out really, really well. And I just basically played the pretend game, you know? And then that was sort of led me to realize a few really important things, that there actually is a system to attracting women, a specific system that if you follow it step by step, it will work every time. And if you don't, then I can predict what will go wrong. In fact, if you explain to me a situation, you know, if a guy were to explain to me a situation that he was in, you know, friend zone, whatever, I can actually reverse engineer that and tell him where it got screwed up, because I know that there are patterns now. But up until that point, I didn't even realize that. I was so stuck behind, you know, how am I going to get this girl to like me even though, you know, I grew up poor. And the truth is that nobody cared but me. You know what I mean? So that was like, that was one of my biggest sort of realizations, one of my biggest mistakes that I made, really. You know, I had a lot of foresights that helped me out. I had a lot of things that I had talked to a lot of my older friends who had already made a lot of mistakes. And I'll never forget this. This was like a moment that changed my life for sure. I was about 8 years old. I was in the trailer park. And I was walking around. It was probably about 8 a.m., actually, like pretty early in the morning. And I was walking around kind of like playing with sticks or something. Like, I don't know, throwing rocks. I don't know what I was doing. Something that little kids do, you know? And there was this guy who lived next door to me in a trailer. And he was, you know, he had a beer in his hand. It was 8 o'clock in the morning. He was already drinking, you know? He's already drunk, actually. And he goes, "Josh, come here." You know, because he knew me. He knew my dad. Everyone knew my family there. So I walked over, and he gets really close to me. I can smell the liquor on him, you know? And he's just obliterated still. And he says, "Look at me," you know? And I go, "Okay." I was a little bit nervous, but, you know, I didn't think this guy was going to do anything to me. And then he said, "Drugs did this to me." And I said, "Okay, I'm not doing drugs." You know, after that, I didn't drink till I was 21. Like, it scared the crap out of me, you know, to see that that was what will happen to you if you continue on that path, if you just ignore it. So I had this sort of gift of learning from other people's mistakes really early. And I think that everyone has that gift, but we just kind of don't take advantage of it very much. So when I got into this space, you know, I started focusing on this. I started asking people questions about what they did wrong. And that was a really big deal for me. You know, I mean, I was able to, you know, the truth is you don't have enough time to make all the mistakes in the world. You just don't. I mean, you're going to be 80 before you finally learn this stuff if you do it that way. You have to ask people for advice, and you have to go after that advice. And that's just what you have to do. And it's probably not just going to be one person. I mean, that's one of the great things about what you do, Bobby, is that you give a lot of opinions, you know, and that's really, really, really helpful. You're not just going, "This is the way it always is," and it's, you know, my way or the highway. You highlight other people too that are you think are intelligent, and you sort of expose people to other things, and that's really, really, really powerful. I try to do that as best I can too, because the truth is that you and I didn't learn this from like one source. It wasn't like the one spot, but at the same time, you can't go chasing everything. You have to, you know, find somebody that resonates with you, and, you know, everybody who's sort of gone into your programs and sort of learned from you has resonated with you specifically. And the same thing for me, you know, and I think that that's really a really, really big mistake that a lot of guys make. And a mistake that I made too in the very beginning was, you know, the first thing I looked up was pickup lines, you know, online. And I went out and tried to use it in a bar, and I got shot down like 2 or 3 times, and I didn't use another pickup line for about 5-6 years, you know, and that was just what happened.
Yeah.
And I don't know. What about you? I mean, for me, yeah, I kind of hit that point in my life when I was younger. You know, I had a lot of other realizations too. Like, I mean, I remember for sure the moment where I hit rock bottom, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. But, you know, what are some of the really huge realizations that you had too? You know, maybe sort of linking back to when you were younger, or you know, maybe some experiences that you had kind of woke you up a little bit and sort of made you realize that you had, you know, either a skill set that you didn't know you had before, or, you know, that you had a problem that you really needed to solve.
You know, it's funny because you had mentioned earlier the whole nice guy and kind of coming across as that guy. And you know, I kind of kidded myself, especially after I got into this, you know, and I started kind of mastering it and later on teaching it. And, you know, I kind of forgot that whole point in my life, because from a very young age, I think I knew that nice guys finished last, and that's not what the girl, you know, I was in high school watching what the girls were going after.
Right.
And I think that I knew it, you know, I knew that's not what they wanted. And I remember having conversations with, you know, my brother and some of my friends talking about why the girls are all attracted to these, you know, the guys that are treating them like shit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I knew it back then. But you know, like I said, my problem had always been that I was shy, and I used to always, you know, sort of in looking in the rear view, think to myself that, you know, that I wasn't like that, you know, that if I could have talked, I would have been okay, because I knew the attitude But looking back on some of the things that I had done over the years, you know, it totally kind of slaps that whole idea in the face, because I can spot many of the nice guy behaviors. But but like I said, the whole shyness thing, you know, my mistakes was, one was the idea that you had to be cool, you know. Like, I used to think that there was this sort of standard of what was cool and what was funny in a conversation.
Right.
And I thought that if I couldn't live up to that standard, it wasn't even worth interacting with a woman. And so I would go in and I would try to be either the cool guy, or I would try to be the really funny guy. Mm. And, you know, I wasn't a naturally good talker. I was only really doing this once I got comfortable enough with a woman to even talk to her. You know, the idea of walking up to a strange woman at a bar and trying to do that was impossible. I'm talking about girls that I was in class with, or girls that I worked with, or girls that I knew from my social circle. Once I got even comfortable enough to have a conversation with them,
that
I always tried to be the cool, funny guy. Mm-hmm. And what happened was is that I never got past that, and I never actually, you know, that they would either laugh at my jokes or they'd walk away, and I would feel good because I didn't seem corny, or I wasn't the nice guy or anything like that. But I never got anywhere. You know, I never really let them see any sort of emotional side of myself. I always protected that, because I never wanted to kind of be, you know, you sort of talked about how you always brought your baggage into a conversation.
Yeah.
When you talked about, you know, living in the trailer, and that you kind of brought that in and talked about it and kind of brought it up, whereas I was sort of hiding mine so deep that I just didn't want anybody to ever think, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know how to talk, that I never let that side of myself out.
Mm-hmm.
That I protected that. And for a long time, didn't get anywhere. I would be happy enough to get one cool line in and walk away from a girl than to actually keep a conversation going and risk her losing that 30-second sort of impression that oh, this guy's pretty cool. Because I knew I couldn't get past that. You know, I hung on to that idea that I had to be the cool, funny guy, and because I couldn't keep that standard up, you know, my conversations never went more than 5 minutes. I never got to know girls. I never got, you know, I was never the guy that could pick up the phone and call a girl to hang out, or I was never the guy that sort of had any sort of female friends. So I think that whole idea of sort of having this standard of you know, you watch stuff like James Bond, and they think that, you know, that's what the cool guy is, you know, that the guy who gets women is this super smooth guy. But the guys that really get women, you know, they're not necessarily super smooth. They don't have the smooth lines. Girls just enjoy being around them because they ignite certain emotions out of these women. You know, well, one of the things is just fun. You know, when a woman's having fun with you, she doesn't care if you're not saying smooth things, if she's enjoying your company, if you're igniting, you know, certain emotions in her, even if they're bad emotions. You know, one of the biggest realizations I had was that it's 10 times better when a woman got angry at me. You know, if a woman was mad at me, it was a lot easier to turn that anger into interest, as opposed to a woman who was just indifferent around me. You know, when a woman was just indifferent to me, there was nothing I could do to make her interested in talking to me. But if I, even if I pissed her off, it was better, you know. And you know, probably like you know, when you go out and you start experimenting, I took that to the extreme of actually pissing her off, thinking that, you know, but just getting some sort of an emotion out of a woman, whether it be anger, trust, getting a woman to trust you, getting a woman to, you know, surprising a woman, you know, all these things were mountains more important than, you know, being the funny guy or being the cool guy.
Right.
And when a guy realizes sort of how he can draw these emotions out of a woman, like you said, it's almost like a, you know, a system where now that you sort of have a game plan, and you're not just going into an interaction going, I gotta be cool, or I gotta be funny, or I gotta impress her. And you think, wait a minute, there's actually a whole other realm of things I could be doing. You know, you have a little bit more of an intention to your conversation or your interaction, and you know, it makes it a lot easier. And that was something that, you know, when I figured that out, things really began to change.
That's interesting, man. So, I mean, it's so much of what you just said, I totally relate to. And it's not probably no surprise there, but, and I mean, it's just kind of like the idea of, you know, realizing in that moment that, holy crap, I'm walking away from this because I'm afraid that I'm going to screw it up if I keep going. You know, yeah. And that was like, that was sort of like, you know, I think a lot of guys get to that point and they're like, well, this is as good as I'm going to get. And this is pretty awesome. Eventually I'll meet a girl who wants to keep talking and she'll just keep going. And then, you know, those are usually the girls who are desperate enough to chase you early on. Yeah. And also I think that the James Bond thing is a huge problem too. I think that really is like the sort of James Bond syndrome is sort of to blame for a lot of guys thinking that what they do is walk into a bar, lean up against the post or the bar, lean up against the bar, you know, drink and then look over and, you know, look classy. Like really in real life, when that happens in your head, you might be thinking, don't, 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 you know, but in reality, everyone's looking at you and just like this guy creepily staring at women at the bar, you know, yeah. And that's not really fair. I mean, it's because of that's the sort of conspiracy that we've been exposed to, this idea that, yes, we have to act like this thing or buy this kind of liquor or wear these kind of clothes in order to attract women. Now, of course, being fun and like that actually beats out any – I mean, you can beat James Bond. If you put James Bond and the two of us, Bobby, in a bar, I guarantee you we would get any woman we wanted and James Bond would have to settle for less, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And the reason why is because we can banter. You know, some of the parts of that were actually realistic with James Bond's character was that he would, you know, especially with Connery, you know, he would banter around a little bit. He would joke around a little bit, you know, and he had really dominant body language for sure. You know, but we know that stuff and we know how to do it now. And it's like the only difference is that now we can create the attraction. We're not just waiting for somebody who's sitting at the bar by herself, you know, like overdressed for something that we're going to, you know, swoop her away. We can actually create that situation anytime we want with any group of people, you know, and that is real power to me. And I think that that's complete crap that we've been sort of exposed to this by, you know, I don't know if it's the movies or what, or, you know, if there was some kind of advertising that got into this that were like, hey, you know, let's bring back the tuxedo or, you know, let's up our tuxedo sales. What are you saying?
The media screwed us on all angles because, you know, on one hand we had the media showing us that guys like James Bond were the guys that got girls, and then on the other hand it was the romantic comedies, you know, where like the wussy guy wound up getting the girl. You know, they never got it right. It was either one extreme or the other. Either they presented that you had to be the super cool guy or you had to be the super needy nice guy finished first at the end of the movie guy, and
right,
you know, as most people out there know, neither one of those are the extreme you want to be at.
No, and neither one of those, I mean, you could probably, the percentage of time in which either of those work is probably about 5. So you may be that guy, and then 5% of the time it might work either way you go on that. Because they are two extremes, you know, and I used to call these guys too cool for school, the guys that would come in like James Bond, because
yeah.
They would be too cool to talk to chicks, you know? And I was like, all right, well, if you're too cool to talk to chicks, I'm just going to go talk to all the chicks. And that's just what's going to happen, you know? And at the end of the night, they would be like, you know, drunk and trying to chat up a group of girls, and the girls are just rejecting them, you know, and it's just what happens, because you can't, you know, it's just not really who you are. No guy's really like that, you know, and what I think that a lot of guys like myself and probably you, Bobby, is when we walked into a bar and we saw then that, you know, we see these guys, maybe we'd see a couple chicks talking to a guy like this. You know, we thought that the guy was walking in and acting cool and girls like that. But the truth is that he did something before we got there that got these girls interested in him in the first place. And then we only see the part where he's sitting there chatting up these girls, you know, and it looks really simple. But that's not really what happens. You know, actually, it's funny. I saw a couple movies lately, and one of them was a great movie for banter. And the guy did like 90% of the stuff he did was wrong in this, you know, just unrealistic. But a couple of things were really funny and like really do work, and that is Crazy Stupid Love. Have you seen that?
Okay, yeah.
That's another one of those movies. It's a romantic comedy, so it's not going to be realistic. Like 90% of it's not real. But then there are certain parts of it that are like, wow, that kind of makes sense, and actually I'd like to try that out, you know. Like he's just bantering, being silly, and like just joking around a bunch. And then there are times when he'd walk up and go super direct, and that worked for him too. And it's just like the guy, the guy's character was so well put together. I really liked that a lot, and I really appreciated it. But you're right, like 95% of romantic comedies are just like showing you that you can be the nice guy and still win, but that's not really true. I mean, it really never happens. And so I think that that's like kind of the big conspiracy that we're sort of being lied to about this by everybody. I don't know why people want to perpetuate this, because it doesn't help anybody to do it, but you know, media, maybe they make money off of it. Maybe girls like to watch movies that are like this. Maybe girls want to believe that this is true, but that's not what they're attracted to, you know? And any girl who's in a relationship, will be the first thing she'll say is, no, that's not, that's not the guy I'm looking for. You know, maybe long-term it is, but I have to get past that first part, you know, where he has got to be more than this in the beginning, and then he's got to sort of equal out to be this sort of nice, sweet guy at the end of it.
And it doesn't change, you know. It's funny because I was at home for the holidays recently with my mother, and she has a friend who's probably in her late 50s, and she told me that her friend's been cheating on her husband. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, why? I said, well, you know, what? Why? Isn't that kind of messed up? I'm like, well, you know, what? She doesn't like the guy, and she's like, he's just too. She's like, nice. He's just too agreeable. He doesn't have any personality. Like, and I was like, you know, it just doesn't change. It's not it's not something that, you know, when you say girls only like the like, not that they like the assholes, but you know, that they like the challenging guys. It's not just high school girls, it's not just college girls. I mean, this is a 55-year-old woman who, you know, saying the same exact thing, and it's like you're saying, you know, why do people keep perpetuating that when it's not working out for anybody? It's not like it's making the girls' lives any better. There's a bunch of guys who are creeping them out by coming on too strong, and they want to like these guys, but they can't, because the guys are killing the attraction by you know, acting needy and you know, giving away their hand too soon.
Yeah, it's so funny, man. I just, we've been told this so much that I really thought it was a lie. Whenever I found out that, you know, I started kind of getting a hunch that maybe this wasn't actually true, you know? Mm-hmm. I really thought that it wasn't. I thought that maybe it was a lie. Maybe it was like, it was just too good to be true, you know? Because I had hoped that, you know, things wouldn't be like this, that there was some other way, that, you know, whatever. I hoped a lot of stuff. But, you know, it just didn't. It just, at the end of the day, it's just not true, you know? It's not true, and I it took me a long time to actually accept that. I just had a really hard time doing that, and it was, you know, I don't know, maybe it was probably 4 years of, like, after I was exposed to that truth in the first place, that women actually are not, like, the nice guys don't finish. They don't even just not finish last. They don't finish, period, you know? I mean, this happens, and I it's, you know, you need to be aware of this, because someday you are going to find the woman of your dreams. She's going to be standing right in front of you. It's going to be the woman for you, and she's going to be like, wow, who is this guy? You know, it's going to just be an instant connection. And if you can't attract her and keep her attracted and make her want you forever, you're fucked. You know? Yeah. And that is really the truth. You know, what was one of the things that sort of helped, you know, after you sort of realized this lie that James Bond isn't really the way to go, what was sort of the big truth that you realized after that, that sort of was the answer? Because I know at this point you're like, well, what is the truth? You know, at this point in your life, you're like, okay, well, if it's not that, then what works? You know, what is it? What do you think, you know, just, you don't have to give away the whole, you know, the farm here.
Anybody who's, you know, any of my readers listening to this, you know, I have no problem giving away anything. I want guys to leave this phone, you know, this interview with stability, and I want to give them stuff they can go out and see tonight, see like, hey, wait a minute, that actually made a huge difference. You know, one of the things, like I said, like you know, with a conversation, I had said initially that I went into it thinking that you know, you had to be James Bond or you had to be really funny. Mm-hmm. And the other mistake that I made, that I said I kind of blocked out of my mind, was going into the nice guy sort of realm. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I realized is that there's this reality that you live in when you're talking to your friends, when you're talking to people you're comfortable with, mm-hmm. Where you don't censor yourself. You know, it's more of a rated R reality where you say it and you're just yourself. But when you get in front of somebody else, whether it be a beautiful woman that you're attracted to, or whether it just be a coworker that you don't really know that well, or mm-hmm. some somebody, you know, standing next to you online at the supermarket, you're just not yourself. You know, you go into a different reality where you sort of put on this mask of like who you think you should be in front of that person.
Right.
And one of the things I realized is that the quicker into a conversation that you sort of remove that mask, that you say something to sort of take it to the level like, hey, it's okay, we can both be real in this conversation, you know, you don't have to put on your sort of social mask, I don't have to put mine on, the easier it's going to be to get that connection. This is now more specifically with a woman, but like I said, this whole idea works, you know, if you're making a friend or talking to even your boss at work. But with a woman, the quicker you sort of remove that mask and say something, you know, I call it impudence, where you're kind of saying something maybe a little bit cheeky, a little like acknowledging something that, you know, you wouldn't normally acknowledge, being a little bold, saying something, you know, even a little shameless, where the woman, you know, kind of, at first she might be a little surprised, you know, like, whoa, he went there this quick.
Mm-hmm.
But once she sees that you're willing to go there, that you know, that you're willing to take the conversation into that rated R, and you're not going to be in, you know, PG conversation for the next hour, it makes her loosen up. And once she loosens up, the whole flow of the conversation is going to go a lot smoother, because now, you know, not only are you not trying to be like the stiff formal guy, but she's also not. You know, now she's going to be giving you a lot more material to work with, because she's not worried that, you know, you're judging her. And I think a lot of guys don't realize that when they come across as like nice guy and formal and polite PG guy to a girl, she now feels like she's got to put that role to you, and now she's going to hide all those fun aspects and all that sort of sexual aspects of her personality, because she's going to think that, you know, you're not comfortable with it, or you look down on it. So you kind of want to let her know as quickly as possible in a conversation that, you know, you get it, we can both be real here, we don't have to, you know, keep this act up, you know. So, you know, that was a big awakening I had.
It's great that you brought that up, because I really don't think I ever talk about this. I don't talk about it in any of my programs or anything either, and it's a huge, I mean, it's just not enough, you know, there's so many things to talk about. But you know, I have an example of this that's pretty hilarious, in that, you know, this is one of my superpowers that I would do all the time, and people would be like, how the hell are you doing this? And this is one of the things that I would do that really impressed people when they'd see it, you know? And I'd never sort of heard it put that specific way, but it totally gels with me. Like, I completely get that. I remember one time I was teaching a class in North Carolina somewhere, and it was, you know, I had the group of guys. It was one of my first real boot camps that I was teaching. And I walked in to this bar and went downstairs, and there's this, you know, group of guys and girls sitting there talking. You could tell that the guys had just met the girls and they were trying to, like, chat these girls up, you know. And so they were standing. So I walked up and I said, hey, I have a question. I hope I'm not interrupting, but I really want to know the answer to this question. And this was true. I wanted to know the answer to this question. I said, I turned to the girls and I said, have either of you two, and this may sound kind of crazy, but have either of you two ever had squirting orgasms before? Then I said, and I was like, because about maybe a week ago, you know, I was having sex with this girl on my couch, and she just, it was like someone dumped a bucket of water on my legs, you know? And so I started going this story, and I just sort of described it, and I was like, I'm wondering how often this happens, because, and the guys, I look over at the guys, and they're like, you know, doing everything but putting their hands over their mouths, like, holy crap, waiting for me to get a drink thrown in my face, you know?
Yeah.
And these girls are laughing, and they're just, these guys are just, what is going on here, right? So after about 5 minutes of talking and laughing, they're like, let's go buy you, do you mind if I buy you a beer? And I said, no, go ahead. So they left to go get me a beer, the girls did, and the guys were standing there, and they were like, what the hell are you? You know, what are you doing? And I said, well, you know, I'm a dating coach, and, you know, I've been teaching sort of guys how to pick up women for a long time. And this is, you know, what, at that point I just started teaching in person, but, you know, I've been doing this virtually or in small groups before that. And it's like, you know, this is what I do for a living. And the guy was like, bullshit, you know, there's no system to this. And I was like, okay, well, if I told you to do something, would you promise to do it? And then tell me what you think afterwards. And he goes, sure. You know, he's like a tough guy. I said, all right, you see that girl over there? And there's this girl, you know, the one girl who's always like standing in the middle of the dance floor dancing by herself, and every guy's afraid to go talk to her or dance with her, you know?
Yeah.
She was this one chick and blonde and dressed up really sexy and everything. I said, walk over to her and stick your hand out like you're going to take your hand, right, to dance with her sort of. And when she puts her hand in yours, and she will, but when she does, you take her hand and you just spin her around slowly, right? And then when she comes back around and she's smiling, which she will be, I want you to turn your back, count to three, and that's it. Then turn back around again and see what happens. And he said, okay, fine. So he left, he walked over, and I didn't tell him that there was anything psychological going on with this. In this concept, there's a lot of compliance and negative body language and value extraction, things like this that are going on that I can explain with psychological principles that have been proven, you know, by psychologists. And that's sort of where I started with all this stuff, is I started studying psychology in college and went from there outside of that to studying Zen. And then eventually was like, I don't need to study this in college. I can study outside of college for free, you know? So I kept going after that. And so a lot of the stuff that I learned, I just sort of applied from psychology class and tested. Truth is actually that about 50% or 60% of stuff that I learned in psychology class, when I tested, didn't hold up in reality. It was, you know, it was not real. But the 40% or so that did was so powerful, it was mind-blowing. So this guy walked over, he did it, you know, he stuck his hand out, twirled around, turned around, he looked at me, and he kind of shrugged for a second, like nothing happened. And just then, two arms, this girl's arms, reach around from behind and grab him on the chest, like grab him from behind, like she's hugging him, and rip the buttons off of his shirt and rip his shirt open and started rubbing all over his chest and dancing with him. And he was like, "Wah!" And he gave me a thumbs up, you know. All his friends were like, "Holy crap." But it just works, you know. We're sort of wired to be attracted to certain things, and women are definitely wired to be attracted to certain qualities in men. And there's a reason why it happens, you know. And if you understand the why behind it, then you can really master this area of your life where you can walk up to any woman, do a few things, and it works. And you know, each woman is a little bit different. You have to try different things, but you'll know which woman to do, you know, to try out which things on, and that's sort of the way that it goes, like the way to really truly reach mastery level. And one of the things that I never really, like I said, I never really talked about though was that idea that you sort of brought up earlier. And you know, it's just, I think that there are a lot of things that a lot of guys take for granted and sort of overlook like that. And I know that you have a program that you sort of gone over for a while, and it's called Make Small Talk Sexy, and you kind of go over a lot of small talk stuff. And I think that that's really, you know, no doubt that this guy, after he did that sort of super move that I gave him, there's no doubt in my mind that he screwed it up. I mean, I know that he did. I know that he's tried to, like, go too fast or go too slow, or, you know, was afraid to touch her after that, or who knows what happened. But, you know, really, at the end of the day, it's really about mastering that section right after that, too. You know, you can't just walk up and do something and then you're home scot-free. You have to really focus on this. And I think that you being, you know, having women sort of come up to you and be like, oh, you know, you're an attractive guy, and then sort of seeing it all fall apart in front of you, you know, like right in front of your face, like you're just like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing. I think having that major problem is kind of what caused you to create such a phenomenal program that touches so much on just what to say to keep the attraction going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, you know, being a shy guy, you know, and you know, you've been, you know, coaching guys personally and out in the field, and you know that every guy is different, you know. Mm-hmm. Guys come in with different problems. Some guys come in and, you know, they don't know when to shut up, and they keep talking, and they just need, you know, you can just point to them and say, hey, listen, you need to chill out, you need to take a step, you know, whatever their particular issue is. Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, my issue, I knew at a very, very young age, was that I call it after the opener syndrome. It wasn't even that I was scared of rejection. It was that it was the minute that opener ended, like you said, the guy on the dance floor, the minute that whole like cool sort of thing ended, that's mm-hmm. where I would have messed up. I would have had no clue where to go from there. So
right,
yeah, that definitely relate to that.
You know, I think one of the things that sort of led me and my sort of problem with that. With, you know, that was sort of one of your major problems whenever you first had to overcome. And, you know, I had we had problems before that, don't get me wrong, both of us. but that was one of the big ones for you. You know, you realized you had some skill, and then beyond that was where your major sticking point was, you know? And mine was not building rapport or really talking afterwards so much. Mine was the exact opposite, was getting the attention in the first place. And just getting women to look at me. And I could walk into a bar, and I still can walk into a bar, and if I don't turn it on, which I hardly ever do, but if I don't turn it on, then no one notices me. I'm just sitting there by myself in the bar. And I kind of like that. You know, I can enjoy a drink, and no one comes and talks to me. And, like, I have a great girlfriend, so I don't want to attract a bunch of women. And I just – I can sit there and do that. Whereas when you go to a bar, you probably get no peace, you know? There's probably women coming up to you still and just, like, interested in you. But that was a really big problem for me in the beginning, was that I was like, why aren't women looking at me and talking to me? Like, I just – the only thing I could come up with was that I was ugly, or that women knew that I was poor. And those were the main things that I thought. That was, like, really what I thought, you know, that was what the case was. So, you know, I had to focus a lot. I was sort of forced to focus on overcoming that one sticking point of getting women's attention and then getting them to that next step. And, of course, as I got to the next step, I realized there's another one, and there's another one, and there's another one. And, you know, as I sort of overcome each one of my sticking points, I became – slowly became this really powerful, you know – I wouldn't say master, because I don't think that anyone's a true master at this. But, you know, I definitely got really, really, really good at it. And to the point where people, you know, people were nonstop asking me what to do and asking for my advice and everything like that. And because I didn't come from an understanding of how to do this in the first place, I wasn't a natural. I knew how to fix everything, you know. And that's one of the powerful components of not being a natural, is that, you know, if you're a natural, you don't really know what you did. You just kind of do it and it happens. That's the definition of a natural. Naturally comes to you. But someone who had to overcome it like you and I did, we have a completely different perspective on this. And we can say, oh, you know, don't move your body so much to the left whenever you talk to a girl. You know, face the right a little bit more, or look into her left eye instead of her right eye, because her left eye will bypass her logical barriers, you know. Things like this, little things that most naturals would not know how to explain. You'd basically have to copy everything that they did and in order to get as good as them. And then you'd still be sort of held back by that lack of structure and lack of understanding. And you'd be a victim to sort of getting lucky instead of making luck happen to you, you know, which is really what I believe that we have the power to do now. You know, and that's one of the reasons why I built the Tao of Badass, is because I realized that as soon as I got to the point where I was able to actually walk into a room and control my environment, that's when I really started feeling like a badass with women. You know, and it wasn't stopping early. Like, you didn't stop there where you're like, oh, okay, now I know how to say stuff, the end. You know, you kept going, you know, and you kept improving yourself, but you had to overcome that hurdle first. You know, I think that a lot, if you're listening to this now and you're like, well, I don't really know what to say either outside of that, then you have to learn that. You have to learn what to say after you attract. And if you're listening to this now and you're like, well, I don't really know how to get the attraction going consistently, then you have to learn that. And then after that, you come to a new one. And when I built the Tao of Badass, my main focus was to give guys one system that would help them overcome multiple problems, you know, multiple sticking points. And they would be able to, you know, it wasn't so focused. Like, I actually didn't even cover what you cover. So it's kind of amazing that didn't dawn on me to cover that. But I went more on the system behind everything and why it works and everything like that. And the reason why I did that is because I wanted guys to master this, you know, not just get good at it or good enough at it or get good enough to attract, you know, the kinds of women that are currently blowing them off in bars or clubs or coffee shops or on the street, whatever, you know, where they meet them at parties, wherever. I wanted guys to be able to take it a level up and then keep leveling up. So I just, you know, I want to develop a program that guys could never grow out of, you know, that would sort of grow with them and the mastery would grow with them. And so that's why I did that, you know, and I really think it's a really important concept to recognize each one of these hurdles. And when you do see it, you have to really go at it with everything you got. I mean, everything, because it literally is the most important area of your life. I mean, if you have money, I know plenty of guys that are absolutely rich and they are miserable.
Yeah.
There's a reason why some rich guys kill themselves, you know? It's not because they, you know, you might think, oh, well, they got a whole bunch of money and they should be happy. They can have any woman they want, but it's not true. They can't have any woman they want. Now they have huge problems. Now they feel like, you know, they are not attractive. They don't love themselves either. You know, and that sound kind of might sound kind of like frou-frou, like woo-woo kind of sounding, but it's true. I mean, if you don't think that you're an attractive guy, it doesn't matter how many women you attract, you're always going to feel like you're tricking them, and you're never going to believe that this woman actually loves you or likes you or is attracted to you, you know? And so that's a really important concept. So a lot of these guys they get everything they think they want. You know, they master business. They're like amazingly in shape, like really physically attractive men, and then they just don't get this woman thing handled, this attraction thing handled, and it's over for them, you know?
Funny you say. I just have I was last weekend. I was in a town called Hoboken near
I know Hoboken.
New York.
And, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I have a friend who lives there, and he's you know, not to you know, hopefully he's not listening, but he's struggled with women since I've known him.
And soft way of putting that.
And he has that exact mentality of there's always the I need something else syndrome. So first, you know, he needed the cool apartment in Hoboken, then he needed the better position at his job, and you know, it was always something else. And the reason I bring this up is because I went last weekend, and he shows up in a new $100,000 Maserati, and I'm thinking like when are you going to learn that this isn't going to change anything? The Maserati is going to get you the attention, you know, people may look at you, but when you don't know what you're doing, none of that matters. It feels good because a girl may look at you when you get out of the car, but when you don't know what to do after that, and you don't know how to actually kind of, like, you know, I know you're very big on body language, and a girl can almost look at him and know just by the way he carries himself that without carrying yourself the right way, that none of that other stuff matters.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and I think that's like, that's a really hard thing for guys like who are in that position to swallow, you know, because your friend has invested so much, literally invested money and a lot of time, most of his life, into this idea. And if he would just kind of give that up for a minute and go, okay, well, let me just try this shit out then he would, you know, he would have his life completely changed, you know, and it would be like, it's just amazing. I think it's one of the hardest things to overcome is this idea that it might be something else. You know, I knew a guy back in North Carolina when I lived there. I guess I did most of my growth in North Carolina, which is why it was like, I keep mentioning it. That's when I really started this stuff. And he was overweight, like really overweight. And he just focused on everything except losing weight, you know? Yeah. I mean, he just would refuse to lose weight. And I was like, you know, you can do all this stuff and it will work. I agree, it will. But you are definitely holding yourself back by being, you know, unhealthy. It's unhealthy. Women are going to look at you and think that you don't care about your body. Now, I know a lot of guys that are extremely overweight and get tons of women. I mean, and good-looking women, too. I mean, really good-looking women. And they just own it really, really well. But why? Why would you want to do that? You know, why don't you just take the time, focus on it. It's going to be a lot of work, you know, but focus on it. Lose the weight, and then you don't have your own body issues to get over either, you know? And that's kind of like, I think that a lot of us will, and this is just sort of the nature of men, is that we want there to be something else besides what's really obvious. And if I learned anything at all in the past, you know, few years, it was that the obvious shit matters. You know, it matters a lot. It's not, you know, it's not that if you're not good looking, because obviously I proved that I didn't think that I was very good looking at all, and I sort of overcame that, and you know, it's not about that. It's more like, you know, if the woman looks at you and she sees your body language and you seem like you don't love yourself or care for yourself, or you're letting yourself go, or she looks at you and she thinks there's no way other women like this guy, then there's no way you're going to attract her. It just won't happen.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to either be so confident that you know, that women are like, well, I don't know, I just got to know more about this guy because he's just so confident and cocky or whatever that I'm just curious. Or you have to understand this stuff so well that it actually makes you confident. You know, and that's really the route that I think you and I both took, Bobby.
Yeah. So, Josh, I like to always, you know, in these sort of interviews, give the listener something that he can try out. Just something that he can go out and see and maybe see a little difference. Is there something that you can kind of recommend they go out tonight, whether it be a body language or something that's going to catch a woman's interest, you know, something that'll help him show a different side of himself, a more attractive side of him, a more badass side of himself, mm-hmm. if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there something you recommend?
Yeah, so probably the thing that'll get you the best results the fastest is going to be making good use of what's called negative body language. Now, this is something that took me a long time to realize, and when I saw it sort of in action and it dawned on me, it was like, you know, Neo all of a sudden seeing the Matrix. You know, I saw it everywhere, and I saw that it was working for guys who used it and guys who didn't use it. Every time they didn't use it, it would blow up in their face. You know, and I was just recognizing this pattern. It would go over and over and over and over again. So I had this this realization. It was actually through watching a friend of mine. My friend was kind of like this master of negative body language, and I'll sort of go into what it is in a moment. And he could attract lots of women at the same time really quickly, but you know, he couldn't get them to answer the phone whenever he would call them. And I maybe would go get 3 phone numbers in a night. He'd get 20, literally. And I would get 3, and you know, he would hook up with none of them, or one, maybe, and I would hook up with all 3 of mine. So there's something wrong happening on both of our parts. You know, I was only getting 3 numbers, he was getting 20, so something that he was doing that I wasn't, you know, and then something that I was doing that he wasn't, that made me have like pretty much 100% retention rate, sort of, if you will, in this case, where it's like these girls actually did come back, and they did, they were curious and interested. So what I realized that he was doing was he was using negative body language, and he was kind of doing it on accident, and I sort of broke it down, deconstructed it, and I'll tell you something that you can do, you know, if you go out tonight that you can do, and you can use this, and it will instantly increase your attraction, probably 3 times, and I've seen that what'll happen is you'll see a spike in attraction really, really majorly. This girl will like start chasing you like crazy all of a sudden, like almost to the point where it's sort of obsessive. You know, and then it sort of levels out to where she's just really, really, really into you all of a sudden. And the sort of spinning the girl around and then turning your back to her, that was sort of made really good use of negative body language. But I'll give you an easier one. This one's pretty slick. Whenever you walk up to a girl, a lot of guys, when they walk into, you know, a lot of guys think about bars, because bars are probably the most common places that guys go to meet women, when in fact bars are probably the worst place. Bars and clubs are the hardest places to meet women, because women are on guard there. There's a lot of competition. The music's loud. It's a very stimulating environment, and you're getting drunk. You know, so there's a lot of stuff working against you at a bar, and I think that that's one of the reasons why you might want to actually go there, because it's kind of like the Shaolin temple. You know, you go there and you train. You know, you don't just, you know, you train hard and fight easy is really like how I like to think of it. You know, so don't think that you're going into a bar to like really get girls to go home with you. You're really going into a bar to train to get girls to go home with you eventually, you know, and, or, you know, whatever it is, or get girls to connect with you, get their phone numbers, whatever it is you want, you know, but it's a training ground, and it's a really good one. So what I would suggest doing is, instead of walking up to a girl and having a line that you deliver immediately, you know, and then just kind of attempting to keep the conversation going immediately, here's something that I love to do. This is called a drive-by. A drive-by sort of makes use of a couple things that I teach, and sort of put them together in this perfect little formula and perfect, you know, quick move. It's easy to do, and uses negative body language really well. So what you should do is walk up, and if you're walking into a bar, one of the worst things you can do, before I get into the best thing, and one of the biggest mistakes guys make, is they walk into a bar and they start looking around for someone to talk to, you know. They're just kind of sitting there, and then I used to call this sharking, you know, because it's like girls see this guy with like basically a shark fin on his head walking around looking for a weak and or bleeding prey, you know, someone who is already injured, some girl who's got low self-esteem, something that they can take advantage of, and that's really how it looks. And so these girls are constantly boxing these guys out of groups, you know. So instead of doing that, I believe that it's best to typically walk somewhere. And, you know, move to a different place, the bar. If it's a big enough bar and it has a downstairs or upstairs, that's really great, because then you can disappear for a little bit and then come back. And as you do this, and as you're walking by these women, it just, all you have to do is say, literally say, "Hey, it's you, I'll be right back," and then keep going. Or, hey, don't move, I'll be right back. Or actually saying don't move might get you in trouble because she probably will move then because she doesn't want to comply. But sometimes you can say it and you can find her later and you can go, what are you doing? I told you not to move, you know, and it can be funny.
Yeah.
So well, a lot of guys don't make use of this. It's one of the easiest ways to meet women. You know, you walk by, there's no risk of rejection because you're already saying immediately, I'll be right back, you know, and then you walk off. And when you come back, if you say something like, oh, hey, there you are, I'll be right back. Don't, you know, I'll be right back. I'll see you in a minute. I'm just going to go downstairs. And then you walk off, you know? And as you're walking off, she's like, who is that guy? You know? And this is exactly what you want her to think. You know, over time, I sort of realized that women sort of, when they interact with men, if they begin to think something that they normally think when they're attracted to a guy, like, for example, who is that guy? That's something that they typically, that's a phrase they ask themselves whenever they're actually attracted to a guy already. If they start to ask that question to themselves, they actually become attracted. It's sort of neurologically programmed so that you can go in reverse order, right? So you there's something called, if you lead, this sort of concept is that if you lead the body, the mind will follow. And if you lead the mind, the body will follow. Meaning that, you know, if you feel confident, you stand up straight, right? You look at women, people in the eyes and, you know, you speak a little bit louder. And if you are feeling not very confident, you can actually stand up straight, look at people in the eyes, and talk a little louder, and you start to feel good, right? And that's what happens. Like if I were to ask you to smile, instantly people feel better, even though they're fake smiling, you know? They kind of, it just releases endorphins. So what the way that works for women is that she starts to go through this, like, who is this guy? Like, who do I know him? Or is, he looks familiar, but, you know, he obviously knows me. And she starts to go through this and invest a lot of energy and mental processes on who you are. And she gets curious about you. And because you've got your back turned to her and you're walking away, she can't actually ask you questions. And so it just allows that thought to stew and to get more and more intense for her. So when you come back, you know, you can literally just go, hey, there you are. Okay, cool, I'm back. And she'll be like, oh, do I know you? And you can literally say, no, I don't know you. But there you are. You know, that was a really fantastic line from, what was it? Austin Powers. He's like, oh, there you are. You know, in a bar. She's like, do I know you? Oh, no, you don't. But there you are. You're right there. You know? And it's just a hilarious banter line. And that's worked for me a ton of times. You know, and there was really very little, if no, risk of rejection during this process because I walk by. So what you're doing when you actually continue walking is you are, anytime you turn your back to somebody, you use a concept called negative body language. And this is the idea that you are not invested at all in the interaction, right? So if you show some kind of interest and say you'll be back, and then you show that you're not invested at the same time, this is what creates solid attraction, right? So interest, but not investment, right? So not neediness. So you want to show non-neediness, but interest. And this is where a lot of guys go wrong. A lot of guys show, they'll either show non-neediness and disinterest because they're overcompensating. So they're like, oh, I don't care, whatever. I'm not interested in you. Like they'll do stuff like that. And then they'll turn their body so they're not facing it and they blow women out, right? So they cause women to reject them because they're angry. And then, or they will use neediness and, you know, non-interest, which is even worse. You know, they're like facing the girl, being like, I don't need you, I don't care, but they're still facing her with her body, you know? So it's sending all these mixed signals. What you want to send is non-neediness. Well, I don't need this, I'm just going to keep walking. And you can literally approach five girls on the way to the bathroom. Like, as you're going to the bathroom or as you're going upstairs, you can do this to five different women. And when you come back in, I guarantee you at least two of them are going to be like, hey, there you are. Where'd you go? You know, and want to talk to you. And that's just how it is. It's really, really, really simple. You know, and it makes it's not, it's less about what you're saying and more about what you're doing while you're saying it. And, you know, there's a lot of advanced concepts that can kind of take you to the next level after that, of course. And, you know, ways that you can sort of use this concept of negative body language to your advantage in a lot more ways. But that's a really easy way to do it. And, you know, it'll take away all of your approach anxiety, too, because you're not afraid of standing there talking, you know. But you know, at the same time, whenever a guy does come back, you know, and he does begin to actually have the conversation with these different girls, what would you, since you're sort of in the space of mastering small talk and making it really work for people, what would you say would be the advice that you'd give a guy when they come back in that situation or any situation like that? What's something that they can do tonight that would help them? You know, most of the guys who are hearing this may already know some of the stuff that you're going to teach because they've followed you before. But, you know, Bobby, what would you say is like one thing that you would say that would really change their their sort of game tonight they can go out and use?
I'm going to give them two pieces of advice. The first piece of advice is something they may have heard before, especially if they're on my list. But it's funny that as much times guys may hear this, it doesn't sink in. And when a guy finally, whether they've been on my list for, you know, 6 months or a year, there's an inevitable time where I'll get the email from them saying, I finally did it, and you were so right. I don't know why I didn't do this so much sooner. Is the idea of switching from asking questions to making statements. You know, a lot of guys, they go in and they immediately, so they came back, they had our interest, and they'll immediately start, you know, let's say with the example with that you just gave, where they walk mm-hmm. by, they said hi to her, now they're coming back, and they're immediately going to start saying, hey, so, you know, what's your name? Do you come here a lot? Oh, yeah, are you from around here? Mm-hmm. Cool. Who, you know, do you know this person? And they're asking all these questions, which, A, they're not even interesting questions, you know, like the question that you had given earlier about the, you know, the squirting orgasm. That's an interesting question. I'm not freaking, you know, not a guy has the ability to ask that question without, you know, but at least it's an interesting question. These guys are asking very dull, that don't elicit any sort of emotion in a woman, that they don't, I like to say that the biggest obstacle that you have nowadays with women, whether you're meeting her for the first time or whether you got her number and you're trying to get her on a date, the biggest obstacle you face is attention deficit disorder from these women. And it's, you know, even if they don't have ADD, we live in a society where they're just bombarded with, you know, text messages, emails, Facebook, you know, that if you don't get her attention, you lose. If you can't hold her attention, you lose. When you start asking these questions that she's heard a million times, you're losing. You're losing her attention instantly. So what I say, you know, and guys might have heard this before, but just try it, trust me, is to rephrase things as questions. Because now you're expressing an aspect of your personality as you say it. You're letting her know a little bit about yourself while you're digging for information about her. So let's just say you were to say to her, so, you know, what do you do for a living? Which, you know, as much as we hate to say that, you know, don't stay away from that topic. Every conversation I overhear, that's one of like the first things a guy says. So if you're dead set on asking a girl what she does, or, you know, instead of saying, so what do? You know, take a wild guess at what she does. And actually, the better or the more absurd it is, the better. So, you know, if you don't want to get absurd, you want to say, you know, you totally look like a school teacher. You just have that like stern, like smack me with a ruler sort of, you know, you just kind of make a guess, and try to make it a little bit funny about what she does and tell her something about herself that makes you think that's what she does. You know, you think she's a nurse because she looks like this. You think she's a, you know, a zoologist, whatever it is. Just try to make a guess, because now you're like bringing a little playfulness into it. And now it's not, she's not going to just say, oh, I'm an accountant. Now she's saying, I'm an accountant. Why did you think I was a nurse? You know, what did it, like, what, it, you know, and then you can kind of, you know, use that to spring off of, instead of staying in that dead end of question after question after question.
Right. I think that's really powerful, actually. You know, it's funny, because I used to do that all the time. I used to say, let me guess. I do this all the time. Let me guess. You are a trapeze artist, and you just got back from, don't tell me. You know, I'll be like, from Indonesia, where you were repairing palm trees. I knew it. You know, I can just, you have this vibe about you. You know, I'm the palm tree repairing kind of trapeze artist girl, you know? And it's like, of course, it's so outrageous and silly that she laughs. You know, that totally works. I can actually vouch for that. That's powerful.
Yeah, and you can use it in so many different, you can say, if you walk up to, you just say, you're not from around here, are you? You know, like, you just, like, look at her like, you're not from around here. Why don't you think I'm around? Oh, you just give off a vibe like you would be from, like, some Midwest town. You just start telling her things about herself. Some of them could be funny, purposely funny, you know, and absurd. And some of them you could be a little bit more, like, trying to hit the nail and try to really, you know, do a little bit of a cold. I hate saying cold read, because a lot of guys get that idea that, like, mystical, like, cold reading, but, you know, cold reading just in terms of you're throwing things out there about her to get her to invest into the conversation, to get her to sort of defend herself a little bit or explain herself. And instead of just giving facts about her life, which facts, anytime you're in the realm of facts in a conversation where you're just sharing facts, there's very little chance of attraction taking place.
Right.
When you move into opinions and observations and that kind of area, there's definitely more possibility of attraction, because now she's learning things about you. Facts don't create attraction, you know.
Right.
So that was one thing. And then earlier, you know, when I talked about kind of taking the conversation to a more real level, one of the ways I do this is, and a lot of guys say, well, Bobby, I don't, you know, you say that, but like I start talking to a girl and she starts asking me questions and I don't know how to kind of take it to that fun or even sexual level.
Mm-hmm.
So a very easy thing to do is to pick a topic that is very likely going to come up. You know, let's stick with the what do you do for a living question, which generally, you know, especially if you're out of college, that question is going to come up within the first 5 minutes of talking to a girl, if you don't set the right tone off the bat. So if you know that kind of question is going to come up, and you know that you don't do something exciting for a living, find some sort of anecdote that you can transition right away from. So to give an example of that, I a few years back, I used to paint houses for a living. Not a painter, but a paint contracting company.
Yeah, I used to do that too.
Not a very glamorous job. It's not a job that, you know, women's eyes sort of glaze over when you start saying, oh, I'm a painter, you know, they're not interested. And I realized that, and I know that conversation's not going to get me anywhere. So I learned that, you know, that if I immediately segue out of it into another area, it was beneficial for me. So I had, one story happened one time where I was... in an old lady's house, painting her house. I'm in her closet, taking the clothes out of her closet, and a bag falls, and it's filled with weird sex toys, you know, strap-on, you know. And, you know, to me, and as I'm picking them up, you know, the woman's, like, coming to the door, and I gotta, like, you know, try to stop her from seeing, what, you know, that I found her sex toys. And point being, though, you know, is that, and I learned that by having that story... And having that on hand, and as many times as I've told it, and I'm sick of telling it, if I'm in a situation with a girl and we're talking about my boring job as a painter, if I quickly say, you know, the job sucks, I'll tell you what, you're never amazed when you find in people's friggin' closets. And this one time, this lady, you know, and you tell that story, and then you can say, what about you? Do you have, you know, what's hiding in your closet? What would I find if I went into your house? What would be, like, the one thing you wouldn't want me to find? You know? And you very easily use that story about your job, told a little bit of a story that let her know that, hey, you know, we can go there, we can talk about sex toys, this is, you know, this isn't the kiddie table. And then you used it now to focus a little bit on her, so, like, you know, what would I find in your closet, you know, you seem like the kind of girl that would have this, or you can say the complete opposite, is like, you seem like the kind of girl that would never have those kind of toys, that probably would be afraid to even touch one, you know, like, you start telling her things about herself. But you see, what I did was just basically take, you know, if you know you're going to get a topic that's boring, you know that she's going to ask you certain things, find ways to get out of there as quickly as possible. So don't be afraid to tell the same story a few times every day if you have to, because you're just using it as a transition point to get somewhere else more interesting. So I think if guys look through their history and think about it, I think, you know, a smart thing to do is think, you know, where do I keep getting stuck? You know, I was on online dating sites, you know, Match.com years ago, and I hated it because I didn't know this stuff at the time, and I felt like I was on that movie Groundhog Day, having the same date over and over. I'd go out, I'd meet the girls at happy hour, and we'd have that same so where did you grow up? Do you have any brothers or sisters? And I didn't know what to do, and I would just stay in that, it would be over and over again. So, you know, when you start realizing, oh, do you have any brothers or sisters, is a question that a girl's going to ask you on an online dating site, or, you know, or if you're meeting her. You know, have a story ready that allows you to get away from that, to break this sort of pattern that she's fallen into of back-and-forth questions, and take it to a different area. So highly recommend guys sort of use what they have in their own life. You know, a lot of guys say, I hate using, you know, stories on the internet, and I'm not advising guys to say, hey, Bobby Rio just used a story about finding sex toys. I'm going to go out and use that story. I'm not saying use, find your own stories, things that relate to your own life, because you have them. You know, we all have them. We all have these kind of stories. So,
yeah, I think a lot of guys... go ahead.
No, I was just saying, that would be my two pieces of advice for the guys that came back, they used your sort of method to capture the girl's attention, and now they got back, you know, and now instead of falling into the trap of same old, that's a way where they can kind of keep it on that fun, flirty level.
I love that. That was so applicable. That was really awesome, man. Thank you so much for sharing that, Bobby. That was just really cool. And I would definitely advise guys, too, you know, if you haven't done this yet, think about questions that you typically want to ask a girl or you want to come up, but whenever it does happen, you kind of stall out, and just write them all down, and then write down a story. Think back and just take your time and think of a story, and then just write down what the story is that's really interesting, you know, segue into it. You can't just go, you know, like I said, the obvious stuff is really important. You can't just go, I paint houses. I found dildos in this old lady's house. Like, that's kind of strange, you know? You have to actually segue into it. You have to go, you know, like you said, the sort of transition phrase for you was, you know, and it's the funniest thing that what you find in people's closets, because I had to go clean out closets and then paint them, you know, just like the closet's a part of a house. I have to go in there and paint it. So, you know, I for example, this old lady, and then you kind of go into the story. So I would definitely recommend, you know, write down a situation that's interesting, do a segue from that question, so write a little transition, right? And then, like, something similar to, you know, and you'd be amazed at what you find in people's closets. Or, for example, if I were to make up one right now for me, like, surfing, right? So, what do you like to do? Oh, I like to surf. And for some reason, I still haven't gotten over the fear that a shark's going to eat me while I'm surfing. And it never has happened, but I did see a shark once when I was in Mexico. And then going to the story, right? So, like, a transition from, like, a thing that you do, or, you know, a question, an answer to a question that you know is going to come up eventually, especially if you ask her what she does, you know, or if you guess, which is even better, what you were saying before, just guess what she does. And she's like, oh, well, what about you? What do you do? You know, you're going to need to anticipate these questions. And, you know, over time, Bobby, you've sort of seen these patterns. You've seen these things pop up, you know, but it doesn't always happen where people actually, you know, that we actually see these patterns. Sometimes we need people to tell us that they're going on, and then we just kind of trust and go try it out, and it works, you know. And I know that this works because I've done it. I've done this. And it's funny that we both came to the same conclusion. We sort of had the same style with what we did. And it does work really, really well. So I strongly suggest you try that out. And just make a list of things that you want to do or things that you want to say, rather, and that will probably come up. And then write transitions and then write a story you want to talk about and then remember them, you know. And even if you can't remember them immediately when you get to a bar, just like write them all down, fold them up, and put them in your pocket. And then whenever you're kind of standing there not doing anything in a bar, kind of like waiting for something to happen or thinking about girls or trying to get the nerve to go up and talk to somebody, just open it up and read it in your head and just kind of go over everything and then fold it back up and put it in your pocket. And I used to do this with like different banter lines that I wanted to say. And I would literally be in the middle of a conversation with a girl and I'd be like, oh shit, what was I going to say? And then I'd pull out this piece of paper and I'd go, hold on. I'd open it up and I'd be like, oh yeah, you're trouble. I don't want any trouble, you know. And then she'd be like, "What was that?" I'd be like, no, don't try to change the subject, you know. And so it's like it just doesn't. And she'd start laughing, and it was just like, you know, it works. It works every time. It will work every time. So you really have to be comfortable doing that. You know, there are no rules when you get out to a bar and you start to go attract women. There's no like, oh well, don't read paper. What if she asks you any of that stuff? You can make everything work to your advantage, you know. And one of those really powerful things to do for sure is to like you're saying, guessing like that, or your sort of tip for keeping the conversation going by segueing from something that you do like that's boring, like your job. And by the way, I told you I did paint houses as well. I painted exterior a lot whenever I used to live in Ann Arbor. So when it was winter, we couldn't paint, you know, because all the paint was frozen because it's so cold. So like that would be something that I might bring up, you know what I mean? And then go into something kind of funny, like how, you know, I was painting and then I would go to paint and by the time my paintbrush came out, it was stuck or something. You know, like just really interesting things like that. And And that's something that, I mean, I did construction for 6 years. I got so many silly, ridiculous stories about that. But just a lot of guys, I think, don't have that right in the forefront of their minds when they're talking to a girl, because there's too many other things going on in their head. So if that's like you and you can't really remember stuff like that, then I recommend just writing it down, you know, and think about it before you get out there and everything. So that was really powerful. Thanks so much for that, Bobby. I appreciate you sharing that. That was gold. I like it.
Yeah, between, you know, the guys go out tonight, they can try your walk past them thing, and now they know what to say. There's absolutely nothing stopping them to go out and test it. I mean, I loved your walking past them thing, because, like, you know, I said my struggle was, you know, was like the conversation. So just to be able to do that and then have that sort of sense of, like, whoa, I don't have to actually have a panic attack, because, you know, I'm just going to be walking past her and saying hi for now, you know, just to mm-hmm. kind of send that vibe out there is a great way for guys who are a little scared to make that first approach, to get started mm-hmm. and actually look, be a little more attractive doing it than, like you said, standing in the corner and, you know, playing with their cell phone. You know, girls know when you're standing there, like, on your cell phone at a bar, it's because, like, they don't think you're so cool that, you know, you got to talk to somebody the whole time. They realize that you're avoiding socializing. That's stupid. I used to do that. I used to play that game.
I, one of the beliefs that I sort of realized or accepted for myself was that women can read your mind almost all the time. I just accepted that, right? You can't hide anything from these girls. You're not going to hide anything. If you're sitting there and you're thinking you're hiding something, then they're seeing you thinking that you're hiding something. That's what they see. They see everything. So you have to really control what goes on in your head as much as possible. You know, you have to really just realize that, because women are reading your body language constantly. I mean, you are constantly saying everything that's going on in your head, you're saying it with your body language at any given moment ever. And that is true. That's true. You just can't help it. It goes straight from your subconscious mind, bypasses your logical brain, and then happens, right? It just happens, and you just do it without thinking. But women are reading all these things, not even consciously either. They're reading these things all subconsciously, and they're getting a weird feeling about you, and that's all they're doing. So, you know, if you sort of had it in your head that you could go out and, like, pretend to be something, like pretend to be the cool guy or something like that, or act like the cool guy, they see you acting like a cool guy, right? That's what they see. Now, you know, earlier I know I said that I used to play the pretend game, and that was a really good sort of segue for me to go, like, well, I can be anybody I want, you know, let me just go be that person. And I'd play the pretend game, and I'd try to, you know, come across like I was whatever kind of guy. What I found is that if I create a belief about myself first, and then I just accepted that in the conversation where I acted like that's how it always has been, that worked. But if I tried to act some way that I didn't believe I was, then it sort of crashed and burned often. So that was one of the major focuses that I had, one of the major problems that I saw, you know.
All right, Josh, I just wanted to ask you, because you've brought in an entirely new perspective to the table. I fully admit that I don't talk enough about these sort of things that you've talked about, especially the body language and all the compliance stuff that you know, you've gotten me sort of on the edge of my seat listening to this stuff, because, you know, I'm a perpetual student of game. I always want to learn more, and I know the guys listening to this have to be sort of foaming at the mouth for more. So where can they learn more about them? Do you have a page that I can send them to where they can kind of find out some more of this stuff?
You know, I actually just shot a video, and it's been kind of going viral. I'm not sure how long I'm going to be able to leave it up, because I've gotten a lot of it's kind of controversial, so I'm not sure how long it'll stay up, but for now it is up, and if you guys want to check it out, I go over some concepts in that video. For example, there's one sort of ultimate underlying concept that sort of decides why women will be attracted to a man in general, and why, you know, given that two men look very similar and act very similar, why women will choose one over the other, and how to integrate that quality and use it in your own attitude and your own personality, so it just sort of amplifies all your attraction. And I go over that concept, and the reason why it's so controversial is because technically, the psychology that I teach, technically, if you take advantage of it and you use it to your own personal gain, technically it's legal, you know, but it's just really unfair to a lot of guys. So, you know, use it at your own risk and be responsible with it for sure. But if they can click on a link, I'll send you a link to that video, and hopefully it'll still be up. If it is, just watch it all the way through and check it out. And I give some amazing tips in there as well on, you know, things like how to get a girl to lean in for a kiss, to kiss you first, and you know, one sentence you can say that will make a girl chase you instead of you having to chase her. And these things work, and they really do work. And I've used them, and yeah. I give several of them away on that. So definitely take notes on that if you can, and you know, watch it while it's still up, because like I said, I've gotten a lot of flack for it. You know, it's not like really bad language or anything like that, but definitely want to watch it when you're alone so you can kind of take notes and be in privacy, and you know, so it's not like someone's looking over your shoulder and you know, watching what you're watching. But yeah, so I, you know, check that out, and like I said, that's been a free video for a long time, but since it's gone viral, I've really been a little bit nervous about it. So at some point, I'll probably be taking it down. And usually, I have a plan to leave it up for 24 hours, so it may only be up for 24 hours after this interview. But you know, check it out and see. And if it's still up, then watch it and don't ask questions, I guess. And if it's not up, then you know, I'm sorry about that, but hopefully it will be. So I'll go ahead and give that link to you, and you can send them there, and they can just read as much as they want to about it. And you know, not read, but sorry, a watch. There's actually words and audio in the video, so you can read it and watch it. So, and listen to it at the same time. So, check that out and just spend the time to definitely learn as much as you possibly can from it. And that's all I really want. You know, if you guys can do that, then I think that you'll be you know, taken to the next level.
Cool. Yeah, I've checked out a handful of your videos, and every time I finish watching them, there's the kind of stuff in there that, you know, you want to go out and friggin' use, and great. Like actionable stuff, which is what I love. So I highly recommend, if you're listening to this, to check out the video, because like anytime you can even pull one or two pieces of information out and see results, that's what it's all about. It's, you know, and Josh's videos are always those sorts where you learn lines, you learn a technique, stuff that you can actually put into action. So Josh, I do want to thank you for coming on and kind of sharing your story today, giving some really great tips and talking about, like I said earlier, talking about things that I don't talk about enough, and it's great to have you on. And we kind of mentioned this at the beginning of the interview, that one of the great things about learning is bringing in people who can kind of bring different point of views and kind of learn different things. And, you know, as myself, a student of game, I love sharing different ideas. So I really appreciate you coming on, and I really hope the guys check out the video.
Yeah, man, thank you so much, Bobby. It's been my absolute pleasure to chat with you about this stuff and to really dive in like this. I hope we can do more of these in the future.
Great, man, and we will have to talk again soon.
For sure, man. Appreciate it.
Yep, have a good one.
You too.